The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Thomas Paine UU Fellowship. I'm happy to see so many people here on this summer weekend. And I would say, no matter who you are or where you are on your spiritual journey, all are welcome here. I'd like to start by reading one stanza of a very famous poem by William Butler Yeats that I think is apropos of what I'm going to say. The Second Coming. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dim tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Well, Gina will now do the chalice light.
The chalice lighting this morning is Socrates' prayer. Dear Pan, and all ye other gods that dwell in this place, grant that I may become fair within, and that such outward things as I have may not war against the spirit within me. May I count him rich who is wise, and as for gold, may I possess so much of it as only a temperate man might bear and carry with him. Is there anything more we can ask for, Phaedrus? The prayer contents me.
If I like it, be with us.
And
we're
all in the world.
Still, Kurt Vonnegut's 100th anniversary, and he did say that the one group of artists who actually succeeded in making people feel more human, at least for a little bit, was the Beatles. I thought we'd sing something from them, so if everyone would stand up as you're willing and able, and sing this famous song.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. Yeah, I get high with a little help from my friends. Oh, I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends. What do I do when my love is away?
Does it worry to feel alone?
How do I feel at the end of the day?
Are you sad because you're on your own?
No, I get by with a little help from my friends. Yeah, I get by with a little help from my friends. Oh, I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends. I need somebody to love.
Could it be anybody?
I just want someone to love.
Would you believe in a love at first sight?
Yeah.
listen, it happens all the time.
What do you see when you turn out the light?
I can't tell you, but I know.
Okay, when did the Philippines declare independence from the United States? And who designed the first American flag? It wasn't Betsy Ross. And if you don't know the answers to these questions, ask our speaker today, Mike Berkheimer. He's a wealth of knowledge. Mike's specialty is in American history. He teaches it in the Haverford School District. Has authored 4 books, among them Lincoln's Christianity, served on the board of Delaware Valley Civil War Roundtable, and has reviewed for the Journal of American History. Mike came to Thomas Paine UU Fellowship as a refugee from other religions and has given much to our fellowship here. He's an active member of our worship committee. That is, he's planned services and spoken many a Sunday morning, and last November it was a Vonnegut service. He organizes Friday night fellowship, sometimes with a provoking film, or maybe a family game night. He also coordinates our monthly book discussion group and has served on our board. Furthermore, he keeps a sharp eye out on current event issues and how they might affect us as a fellowship, and has alerted us to potential speakers who are affiliated with a pernicious group. On a personal note, he's married with 3 children and he likes bratwurst. So this morning, Mike Berkheimer will discuss why you should be interested in Socrates.
Thank you, Gina. Oh, Bill and Ted was up there. I don't know if anyone had seen that movie where they meet Socrates, they call him. That should be a Friday Night Fellowship movie, I think. But now, we've all heard of Socrates, that famous guy in statues. He's called the father of Western philosophy, which means the love of wisdom. But my aim here is not to give an exhaustive biography about Socrates, but to focus on one aspect of his life that I think could apply to all of us today in our larger society in how we think. Now, what can we know about this guy, actually? He wrote nothing down himself. We only have the works of students that came after him, who knew him. The only mention of him that we have, that when he was alive, was a playwright, Aristophanes, who wrote what was called Old Comedy, and he was basically the equivalent of Saturday Night Live. He would say what was going on in Athens, and he would make fun of the local politicians. Well, in one of his plays, The Clouds, he has Socrates show up in it, and Socrates is a moron in this play. He's a guy who's like hangs in a basket on ropes from a tree and like asks stupid questions to people as they go by, And people would, of course, realize that Socrates, and you were supposed, the person was supposed to be sitting in the audience, and the audience would laugh at them and so forth. I don't know if Socrates actually went there, but that was one take on him when he was alive. So we know he existed and so forth. Now, what we can know about, you know, what we think we know is from his main student Plato, and Xenophon and some other ones. According to Plato, he was a bricklayer. That was his job. He was short, bald, kind of chubby, with strong arms from being a bricklayer and a bit of a heavy drinker. He was considered ugly by people, and he would walk around in dirty clothes, not interested in his appearance. Supposedly, according to the book's Symposium, he married the ugliest and meanest woman he could find, according to Plato. So the idea was that he did not want to enjoy domestic life, that would get in the way of his mission as he saw it. So if you Google, and as I was dealing with Gene on this, things that would pop up, 5 reasons why Socrates was a horrible husband would show up on Google searches. So he didn't want to stay, so he was not a good father and so forth to his children. He would not accept payment for his teachings. He thought that would make him, that would color his teachings, and he would try to fit what people were paying him, which got his wife and family mad, because his wife apparently told him, "You should take students, you're famous, we could be making money," and he, no, I'm not gonna do that. He was apparently a very brave soldier. He had fought in many of the wars, particularly the Peloponnesian War, as an older man. Famously, he saved one of his students, Alcibiades, who becomes a controversial figure in the Peloponnesian War. Socrates was apparently in love with Alcibiades and one of his students, and you know, they had a different opinion about things like that in classical Greece. He saw himself as what he called a gadfly to Athens. He was the fly that would bite the horse of Athens and be annoying to Athens to make it go. And I could see how he would be annoying to people. He would go to the Agora, which is the marketplace, but it was also just a gathering place in Athens. And he would walk around and ask questions and annoy people. He saw it as his duty to push people to the truth. And his method was to keep asking questions. We call that the Socratic method after him. So a famous dialogue, one of them that I remember, is he asks a soldier, what is courage? What does courage mean? And the soldier says, well, you know, not running away in battle, that's courage. He says, well, what if you have to retreat to get, you know, to fight in a better position? Well, you know, maybe it's not running. And he would keep going and keep asking questions and keep asking questions. So finally they got to the point was courage was the ability to think clearly and act logically under great stress. And Socrates believed that there was truth and you could find it this way. Now, very briefly, he was put to death for corrupting the youth. What would he do to corrupt the youth? Well, he was followed around. He had loyal followers that would follow around some of his young guys, and they'd ask him, should we worship the gods? Socrates' view was the Greek gods that, as they've come down to us in mythology, were not worthy of worship. Even the nicest Greek gods are pretty nasty. Like Apollo, at one point, some girls, you know, because Apollo is so dreamy, she watches him as he goes across the sky, and he gets embarrassed, so he turns her into a sunflower. So she could just, I mean, so he said, well, why would you worship that? You wouldn't worship that if a person was doing that. Now, people have started to say, well, Socrates was an atheist, and that was one of the charges against him, that he was teaching atheism to the youth. But he believed, no, there would be a god, but the gods would have to be all good, because to be worthy of worship. Well, at the time, they thought that this was corrupting youth, because if you didn't worship the right gods, you know, they could make an earthquake happen or whatever. So him doing that would be bad. Well, they put him on trial for this. About 70 years old, they put him on trial for this. And they really didn't want to kill him because he was famous. And he was famous throughout Greece. So it was kind of like, just say you believe in the gods. Just say that. And Socrates said, I can't do that. I have an inner daemon, not demon, daemon, that would bother me if I lie. Conscience. And he said, if I'm arguing something or trying to teach something and I know that I cheated a little bit, it bothers me. So I can't lie like this. So he was sentenced to death. He was sentenced to death by drinking hemlock. And even then, they didn't want to kill him. And the day before he was to be executed, they pretty much told him, you know, it'd be a shame if you left here and, you know, we're going to suddenly forget to lock the door to yourself. So it'd be a shame if, you know, we came here tomorrow and you weren't here, but we're just saying that. So some of his students said, come on, let's go. And he said, no, I taught to be loyal to your state and loyal to the law, so I will drink the hemlock. He drank it. Plato, who was there, says in hemlock, it sort of paralyzes you from going up. He says, Socrates, still strong from being his bricklayer days, took a while to die and eventually laid down. His last words were, hey, I owe that guy a chicken. Could you pay that person a chicken? Get my family to pay that person a chicken. That was his last words. Now, obviously, you could go much further into Socrates, and I enjoy reading those dialogues of him and so forth, but I want to talk about a story that really gets to the point here. In Greece, there was an oracle of Delphi. She was a priestess. She would go there. She would sit on a stool with a big bowl of water, and you would ask her a question, or you would write down a question. You stood behind a curtain. And supposedly, Apollo was whispering in her ear. And she would go into this convulsions, and she would give you the answer to the questions. Now, usually her answers were so vague that they could be interpreted anyway. Famously, she's famous for saying the wooden walls will save Greece during a Persian invasion, but that's a whole different story. People interpreted different things. But what she what she usually say, would say was so vague that, you know, people could think, ah, you know, whatever happened, they could say, ah, she got it right. Now, people used to say, oh, well, this was all a scam. But they recently, interesting book by Terry Bradford about this was doing the archaeology there. They think there was a double fault near a volcano where she was. So she was breathing, which the gas she was breathing in was like nitrous, you know, the stuff your dentist gives you, nitrous oxide. And so she was actually getting high in a way. She wasn't faking that. But supposedly, they asked her, who was the wisest man in Greece? And John, if you would play this video. This is a short 3-minute video using old school computer technology graphics to show, to tell about this story.
Who was Socrates? Though known as one of the most influential thinkers of all time, Socrates never wrote down a single word. So in reality, all we know about him is what others tell us. Most famously, Socrates is a figure in Plato's dialogues, where, among other things, he is depicted as short, fat, and ugly, wears dirty togas, doesn't have a job to support his wife and kids, doesn't participate in Athens' political life, and doesn't care about his social status. But it's also said of him that he could stay up all night without feeling tired the next day, could drink anyone under the table without getting drunk, and is seemingly impervious to heat and cold. A total dreamboat indeed. Yes, according to Plato, Socrates is a seemingly superhuman individual who cares only about asking questions about moral knowledge. It all started when the oracle at Delphi declared that no one was wiser than Socrates. Puzzled by this claim, Socrates set about testing the riddle by seeking out knowledge from people who claimed to have it. But while the people thought they had good answers, Socrates' cross-examination showed them they were wrong. This, of course, made them look like fools, which made a lot of people in Athens hate him. In the end, Socrates decided that he was wise. At least he knew that he didn't know. You would think Socrates might have backed off at this point, but he didn't. Even in the face of a death sentence, he refused to stop philosophizing, for Socrates thought fearing unknown things, like death, was just another way in which we pretend to know, when in fact, we don't. Socrates believed he had a responsibility to his fellow Athenians to root out arrogance and ignorance wherever he found it. After all, false beliefs are bad for your health. Think about it like this. If you have a belief that you can safely cross the street, but don't know that an 18-wheeler is bearing down on you, and if you also happen to suffer from hubris, you're not going to listen to someone who tries to tell you to get out of the street. Instead, you'll just walk right into the path of that massive truck and, well, splat. False beliefs influence our actions and degrade our character. And this is what Socrates wanted to prevent. So the next time you think you know something, consider the wisdom of not thinking you know something you don't. Of course, everything we know about Socrates is based on other people's words. So, dear viewer, should we believe that he actually existed, or are his ideas all that matter?
I like those old school graphics. Now, I want to get to that point there that Socrates made, which is certainly not the whole of his teachings. But I'll say this. Over the past few years, I've noticed this problem in myself and others. I feel it is one of the biggest problems, say our country and society faces over the past few years. And I would put it this way. People are too darn sure of themselves. If you know you are right, you can't possibly be wrong. Then it is easy to write others off as idiots, or evil, or liars. I'm guilty of this, just like other people are. Now, I admit certainty brings a level of comfort to us. We can find old tropes that we repeat in public and to ourselves soothing. But do we ever really interrogate them? Are they really true? Were they true once, but circumstances have changed? The famous economist John Maynard Keynes told a story. He was for one policy at one time, and then he said, I think we need to do something the exact opposite now. And somebody said, aha, you were for that before. And he said, when the facts change, my opinions change. What do you do? Now, it's hard to do what Socrates does. Cognitive dissonance is hard. It's much easier to keep certain tropes at hand. But maybe we would all be better off being a little uncomfortable and having some intellectual humility. I don't have all the answers. I am not the arbiter of every moral issue or whatever type of issue. I can try my best to get to the truth, and maybe, probably, I'll never get there completely. Wouldn't we be better off if we kept this in mind? Wouldn't we have more productive conversations in the going on if we kept that in mind? So, for all his faults, maybe Socrates was the wisest man. And I joked that I want to pass on to my kids the wisdom of the ancients. Well, maybe this is one of them. Your father is wise because he knows nothing. But he knows that he knows nothing. Thank you very much. I just point out this painting has always fascinated me by David. This was painted during right around the French Revolution. You can guess what that is, Socrates getting the hemlock. Though there's some interesting symbolism in that painting. If anyone can count the people in the room beyond Socrates, what's going on there? There are 12. What is this symbolism of? Last Supper. You went to a Roman Catholic church, you say every Mass. When he was given up to death, the death he freely accepted, he took the cup. This is going to this. A secular Last Supper. And almost with the light going on Socrates, you're supposed to view it that way. I think he kind of made Socrates a little bit better looking than he probably was in real life, but that's all right. All right, thank you.
Okay, we've come to that point of our service called Matters of the Heart. This is a opportunity for you to share either a joy that's lifting you up or a sorrow that's weighing you down with our faith community. We're going to have a brief musical interlude here for a minute and a half or so. And after that, you will be able to come up. I would ask those here in the sanctuary first to come up one at a time to the microphone up at the front and state your name and your joy or sorrow. And once those in the sanctuary here have had an opportunity to do so, then I will give additional instructions for those on Zoom, for those who haven't been with us in the past. But for now, we are going to have a brief musical interlude here. So sit back, gather your thoughts, and we'll begin in just a second. So we will bring this time of sharing to a close. We're going to do something a little bit different. Mike, do you want to introduce?
Be singing a verse written by Joni Mitchell, performed by Judy Collins of Both Sides Now. Going with Clouds, which was the play Aristophanes wrote. So stand.
Goes and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feathered canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way. but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds' illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds.
The truth that makes us free are the closing words this morning by the well-known Anonymous. May the truth that makes us free, and the hope that never dies, and the love that casts out all fear, lead us forward together till the day breaks and the shadows flee away.
I am going to extinguish this chalice, but not the light that hopefully it brings to the world. Our closing song is more of a sad song on the passing of time, though I guess fitting with our 60s theme, I guess. If everyone would stand, if they're willing and able, and sing April Come She Will.
When streams are ripe and swelled with rain, may she will stay, resting in my arms again. Restless walk, she'll prowl the night. July, she will fly and give no warning to her flight. August, die she must. The autumn blow chilly and cold. September I'll remember. A love once knew has now